You are now listening to the NYYST podcast.
Welcome back. This is episode 201 of the NYYST podcast. I am your host, Christian. As always, joined by my co-host, Chris.
You!
And he's not here today.
He fucking, you know what? Didn't we just talk about how he used to just vanish out of nowhere? He used to just go MIA. and it was like, we gave him credit. We were like, at least now you tell us when you can't make it. And today it was just, he's like, you know what? I'm going to give it to him again. And he just vanished.
Last week was our 200th episode. And again, I want to start the show by thanking everybody for their support. I thought we had a great show last week with the wrap up of the Keep 'em Dump 'ems. Usually we do the NYYST awards either before or after those episodes. I think one year we did it before and then I changed it to after or whatever. I'm just not into it this year, to be honest with you. I don't feel like there's a reason to celebrate the season at all. But if you want us to do an awards episode, go to iTunes, leave us a 5-star rating or review and tell us, and I'll take it under consideration. But as if you're like me, you probably find no reason to celebrate this season at all. What were the highs of the season that you really want to talk about? There really isn't any.
I don't want to recap this season.
That guy, Rye, is not here, but just in a few minutes, who will be here is the one and only Ron Bloomberg, the first designated hitter in the history of Major League Baseball. The interview was pre-recorded before we opened the show. You're going to love it. If you are like us and you love hearing about the days of Mickey Mantle, the days of Thurman Munson, that era of baseball from a guy that lived it, this is going to be just outstanding. We thought we were going to get Ron for like 15 or 20 minutes. I think he gave us nearly an entire hour.
Let me tell you, I could probably sit with Ron for 5 hours and just let him talk. And you know what? We do have to say this real quick. Stat Guy Rise texting us. He just reminded us. Alex Trebek passed away. And my heart is broken right now because Alex Trebek is my boy and I got to send him, his family, my condolences right now. Alex Trebek, legend, dies at 80 years old today. We're recording on Sunday. Today, the 9th.
Obviously, Chris is much bigger into Jeopardy than I am. I can't even tell you that I maybe watched 50 episodes of it in my life. It was just something that I wasn't into, but I understand the cultural impact of Alex Trebek and the fact that we lost him in this just godforsaken year is just another layer on in that cake.
It was like, so yeah, it was the dagger. This was the dagger for me.
Just another awful, awful thing that happened in 2020. We should get this out of the way. We're not going to talk about it past what I'm going to say. As we record here on Sunday, last night, after 5 days, the media, you know, and they declared Joe Biden the winner of the presidential election. So, you know, you want to take a break from that, the nastiness of this election. That's what we're here for right now. Obviously, the current president, Donald Trump, is not going away anytime soon. He's going to fight this. So even though it seems like we are at a point where we know who the president's going to be, there's not going to be any resolution to this for
you knew it was going to get ugly. You knew it was going to be a little, you know, ugly.
Turn your brain off from that for a minute. I understand it's only the leader of the free world and it's probably the most important thing ever, but just turn your brain off from it for a little bit and, you know, just dive into this interview with us with Ron Bloomberg here. I got to say this also, even though he doesn't listen to the show because he's a piece of garbage. He did use our code at Manscaped and picked up a kit when we needed him to. I do want to congratulate.
Well, you cut out
on Friday night.
You cut out. Who'd you say? Who?
My cousin. What, you didn't hear it?
Oh, no. You cut out. It like froze. You froze. Your cousin got married.
My cousin Adam and his wife Brielle and his new wife Brielle. Congratulations. I got completely shit-faced and hammered on Friday night.
You were trashed, bro.
And I'm officially retired from drinking now.
Wow. So, that's it. Even if I invite you down for a little banger down here in Howell, you won't drink with me?
I'm done. I'm retired. I hang up my jersey.
I'll get you. Congrats, Adam. The better of the two seminarios for sure.
My ass has been dragging for better part of 2 days, but man, you got to give it to Ron Bloomberg for
absolutely
bringing up the energy in the room, man.
Absolutely. So
I mean, unless there's anything else you want to talk about before we get into Ronnie here.
No, man. Look, I this interview, just go into, look, would it be awesome to get like Aaron Judge on the show or someone like that? Yeah, of course. But when you have a guy like Ron Bloomberg come on this show and to give you that old school take and those stories that you're not going to get anywhere else, man, it's something that you kind of in today's day and age where you ask yourself why you're so into sports and why it matters so much. These stories make it why you love the game the way you do. So just kind of sit back and enjoy this and Ronnie knows how to tell a story. So enjoy this, I'd say, is all I can give you. This interview with former Yankees designated hitter Ron Bloomberg is brought to you by Manscaped.com. If you're headed in or out of New York City this November, our friends at Manscaped, the now global leaders in below-the-waist male grooming, have taken over Penn Station. Manscaped wants you to use the right tools for the job and join the movement this holiday season. Manscaped is dedicated to helping you level up your full-body grooming game. Over 1 million men trust Manscaped tools for their family jewels. They've taken over the male grooming world, but that wasn't enough. They decided to take over the largest train station in the Western Hemisphere at Penn Station in New York City. They have forever changed the grooming game with the Perfect Package 3.0, which comes with the essential Lawnmower 3.0. You hear us talk about it all the time. We shave our balls with that. It's waterproof, cordless body trimmer, and a ton of other liquid formulations to round out your manscaping routine. This is the best trimmer on the market. Inside the Perfect Package, you'll also find the Manscaped Crop Preserver Ball Deodorant, an anti-chafing ball deodorant and moisturizer. You'll also find the Crop Reviver Ball Toner. Don't get it mixed up, folks. That could be dangerous. A below-the-waist toner that's designed to give you a pep in your step, and you smell good. Head over to Manscaped.com right now. Get 20% off and free shipping using promo code MIYST20. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. Don't forget to use promo code MIYST20. Don't miss this limited time offer and hop on the Manscaped Express this November. Use promo code MIYST20 at checkout for 20% off plus free shipping. Enjoy this interview with Ron Bloomberg.
All right, Chris and Christian of the NYYST podcast on Zoom here with the first ever Major League Baseball designated hitter, Ron Bloomberg of the New York Yankees. Ron, how you doing this morning?
Oh, it's great. It's great to be able to talk to you. It's beautiful down in Atlanta. Hope y'all are having a fun time, and I'm looking forward to doing this for y'all.
Ron, I got to ask you, I don't know about Christian. We were talking about this before we started recording. I'm down in South Jersey. It's like 80 degrees here right now. What do you got down there? You're in the 90s right now?
Oh, we had a major storm. We had that Zeta to come up, the stuff that hit the Gulf Coast. And we usually don't get anything because I'm in Atlanta. And it's probably been averaging around about 70 to 75 every single day. And that storm came up, and we usually don't have a tropical storm, but we had like 60, 70 mile an hour winds, like a northeastern for y'all.
Jeez.
And when you had Sandy to hit y'all, I had, tree limbs down, there's floods down. So in the last 4 or 5 days, I've been having people cutting some trees, limbs, and all that stuff down. But it's warm, but it's winter time now, and hopefully it'll get cool. And then next spring it'll get warm, and we'll have baseball. That'd be great.
Can't wait for baseball, Ron. But we wanted to have you on today because you've been very active on social media, on Twitter at Ron Bloomberg One. So definitely give Ron a follow. Help him get that blue check mark that he's been. He's been campaigning for there. We want to get started with the interview, Ron. You know, you were the first overall pick in 1967. The Yankees drafted you with that first overall pick. It's a very rare thing for somebody to be the first overall pick, a high honor. Just take us through what draft day was like and becoming the first pick and becoming a New York Yankee.
To me, it was unbelievable. I got drafted by the Yankees 1967. I was 17 years old. And it was basically, I had some opportunities. I signed a basketball scholarship to go to UCLA. John Wooten, I signed up what they call a letter of intent. A letter of intent is a piece of paper that if you decide to play basketball, you have to play with that college. It's not like now that these recruits or these prospects, they'll sign like a they won't sign, but they have a commitment like every week. I want to go to UCLA. I want to go to Michigan. I'm going to go to Arizona, Miami or Alabama. And I signed a basketball scholarship with John Wooten in 67. And also I signed with Bear Bryant in 1967 to play football at Alabama.
Wow.
So I had an opportunity to make a choice between baseball, basketball, or football. And I knew I was going to get drafted real high. The Yankees contacted me, probably about a month earlier before the draft and told me that they would like to draft me. And would I sign with them if I got drafted by the Yankees? And that was a no-brainer. You know, I mean, being Jewish, living down south, coming up to New York, being a Yankee fan, my idol was Mickey Mantle, and that was a no-brainer. I got drafted that year, and let me see, it was in, I forgot what day it was, but anyway, when I got, it was June sometimes, when I got drafted number one, that was a no-brainer. I know that UCLA and Alabama, they contacted me and they tried to persuade me to go to that route, but I said, absolutely not. I said,
I mean, you had a chance to be a Yankee, right?
Oh, absolutely. No, let me tell you something. 17 years old, back then down in Atlanta, Atlanta wasn't the largest baseball fans and not the biggest baseball town. We used to have the minor leagues when I was growing up. The Milwaukee Braves moved to Atlanta. Atlanta got the Atlanta Braves. So baseball became very, very big down in Atlanta. But I was never going to change from my allegiance from being a Yankee fan living down south to be a Braves fan. I said, no way. I said, when I was growing up, everybody had the hats which y'all have on now, with, I guarantee you, the Yankee hats. And that's what it was. I mean, I wanted to have the opportunity, because when I was growing up, the only games that we got on a Saturday was being televised by Dizzy Dean and Pee-wee Reese. And I used to watch them, and the only games that we actually got to watch was the New York Yankees. And you know, when they used to call the games and you used to watch, it was Roger Maris and Johnny Blanchard and Elston Howard and Yogi Berra and Whitey Ford, Mickey Mantle. You have these guys, and, you know, I'm 15, 16 years old, and I'm watching that. And, you know, in Yankee Stadium, that's all anybody ever talked about, Yankee Stadium. And when I got drafted by them, I had to sign with them. And, you know, you and I were talking before we got on the air, but y'all got to Yankee Stadium. Y'all got to feel that it was, you cherished that when you got to Yankee Stadium. You know, you got to see, but you probably didn't see the real Yankee Stadium. You didn't see you probably saw the house that a Jeter built. Am I right?
Well, listen, there's one thing that I'll always cherish as a kid was in the old stadium walking through like the tunnel when you walk through to the first game of the year. I always remember it with my dad walking through that tunnel and seeing the field for the first time still gives me goosebumps right now.
Yeah, but I think what Ron is referring to is the original stadium.
Oh, I know, I know.
Ruthville. We, you know.
But now we don't even get that anymore.
Yeah, no, I didn't get that because I was born in 83. I think I went to my first game in 88. So I remember the renovated stadium. That
Renovation stadium. Yeah. See, I saw the real stadium. I miss
that place so much, though. I do.
Oh, absolutely. I saw the real stadium where, you know, when I first signed with the Yankees and I signed my first when I signed the contract, I never, you know, my parents had no money. And we got to go on an airplane. And I flew into LaGuardia and we got picked up. And they took us to the Hilton on downtown. And it was a big sign, welcome Ron Bloomberg, New York Yankee draft pick, first Jewish Yankee. And it had on the sign underneath it, and it had like a billboard back then. And it says, first Jewish Yankee, okay? Then they picked us up. We go to Yankee Stadium, and the first guy I got interviewed with, and we walked in, it was like a mausoleum. I mean, it was unbelievable. I mean, it was nobody there. It was like 3,000-4,000 people. But I got up in the press box, and my first guy I got interviewed by was Walter Cronkite.
Wow.
That was before your time. Okay. You probably have heard of him.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. No, we heard know who he is.
Okay. And then I got interviewed by Scooter, of course, and Bill White and Frank Messer. And I'm looking at, you know, even to me, and I'm looking at the, I'm looking at the facade. I'm looking at the, you know, Megatron out there. I'm looking at the L because I never heard of a subway before. And I had no idea what that was. I'm hearing like this. And I saw the train going by. And I know I asked a Scooter. I said, Phil, what is that? He said, that's a subway. And I'm looking at the stadium. And there's probably about 3,000-4,000 people there. That's all. The team wasn't good. And I'm watching, and I saw Mickey Mantle out there. And, you know, and you see all those guys. And then they took me down to the locker room. I'm 17 years old. You know, I'm a baby, but 17 years old. And I remember got introduced to Pete Sheehy. Of course, he was the clubhouse guy, head of the clubhouse. And he took me into the locker room, and Mickey was being taped up, and he was having it looked like a mummy. And, you know, and they all were so nice to me. They said, how would you like to take a couple of swings? So I said, yeah. So they got me a uniform. I don't think it was number 12 that they gave to me when I finally came up to New York. I don't even remember the jersey number that they gave me. But I remember taking some swings, and I remember – it was Ralph Houk sitting behind there. And I remember Mickey was watching. I remember that Yogi was watching. And, you know, 17-year-old kid, you know, I mean, hey, I've never been around these types of people before. And, you know, I've been to the Dapper Dan, you know, the high school all-star games and stuff like that. But this is a little bit different. This is, you know, these are superstars. These are not high school kids. You know, I mean, these are guys that are, you know, I mean, this is your idol. This is Yankee Stadium. This is something. This is a religious ground that you're taking batting practice. And I remember, you know, taking some swings. And I mean, I'm shaking. You know, hey, I've never shaked before an athletic event before in my whole life because I love this. But I'm nervous because they're sitting behind me. You know, I'm a 17-year-old kid. These kids, these ball players like my father. And I'm in Yankee Stadium. I just signed a Yankee contract. I'm a New York Yankee. And I'm taking batting practice. And I remember Elston Howard said, I want you to swing, big kid, you know, big guy like that. And I thought I hit a ball pretty good. And I don't even think I hit it out of the cage. I think I hit the top of the cage. But anyway, I didn't care. You know, I mean, that was a thrill to me. That's something. And then that night, it was a big place that the Yankee took me to because they had an afternoon game. They took me to a place called oh gosh, you know, I mean, oh gosh, I forgot. I'll remember where I'm talking because I forget everything. But then they took me to a play, Fiddler on the Roof, with Zero Mostel. And I sat down and watched that, and that was incredible. And it was, I'll remember what where they took me to, because, I mean, that was a, Tutt Shores. They took me, remember Tutt Shores? You heard that name?
I don't think I have, no.
Okay, look it up. After you leave me, look it up. That was where all the ball players was. And right next to us, my mom and dad were sitting, and we're sitting right next to Frank Sinatra. You heard of Frank, of course.
Oh, yeah.
And I had no idea who he was. The only people I knew was the Temptations and the Four Tops and the Supremes and people like that, because I'm, you know, I like Motown.
Right.
And my mother went nuts because, of course, Frank Sinatra, and we got introduced to him. But it was a wonderful thing. And I got to do that and played in the minor leagues for a couple of years and came up to the big leagues. And it was a thrill. I mean, it was, you know, I mean, I tell everybody, I lived a fantasy. I got to do something what I wanted to do. Got to play in the greatest fans in the whole world. Got to meet the greatest people in the world. And after I had to retire and got released, I came to New York Yankees, old timers say almost every year. Did a lot of stuff with the Steinbrenners, and I still do this every single year. And I do a lot of meet and greets with them, and they are wonderful people to me. I love them. I love the people in New York, the greatest fans in the whole world. When you are a Yankee, you are a true Yankee through and through and through.
Well, one of the things you did get to do, Ron, is the first Major League Baseball designated hitter. That happened on April 6th in 1973 against the Boston Red Sox. I believe you drew a walk against Louis Tiant. How did that decision come about? Did you know you were going to be the DH? Was that something the Yankees talked to you about, like in spring training? Or was it just as something as simple as, hey, you show up at the ballpark one day and you saw your name on the lineup card as the designated hitter?
No, you know, I screwed up the game in 73. I'm very happy about it. So that was fun for me. But really what happened, I was down in spring training coming off a pretty good year in 72. 4 days we were supposed to break camp. I pulled a hamstring. And so I was running first base to a game. I was playing first base all doing spring training. And I pulled a hammy pretty good. And I didn't say anything to any of the coaches, because if I did, two things they would have done: send me down to I've been put on the DL, and if you get put on the DL when you are playing up in the big leagues, and first thing you think about is Wally Pipp. You think about somebody's going to take your place, like what happened to
Lou Gehrig.
Lou Gehrig. And I said, no way, that's not going to happen to me. So I remember I went out to dinner that night. I think I went out with Rizzuto. I went out with Scooter, and I went out with Ellie, and we're having dinner, and I'm limping just a little bit. They said, how's your hammy? I said, oh, it's good, you know, like that. I said, it's crap, you know, like that. I said, it's not good. I said, don't you tell anybody. Because to be honest with you, we thought the DH was a joke. It was a designated pinch hitter. I mean, everybody down in spring training, I'm playing first base, and everybody was just jumping to be the DH so they could hit. You know, they don't have to go down to the cages. And we're training down in Fort Lauderdale at that particular time, and we had a second field where if we were not playing, we would take batting practice on the second field. But these guys wanted to jump in against, you know, hey, we're trying to break camp. And we're trying to get our timing done. Everybody wanted to be the DH and face these pitchers. So, I mean, of course, nobody even knew what the DH was. We thought it was a joke, to be honest with you. A DH, you know, this is like playing stickball. You know, a person, we're going to hit for the pitcher. We knew the pitchers, the majority of pitchers could hit anyway. You know, hey, you hit for the pitcher today. So, you know, everybody used to hit. I didn't. So Ralph found out I pulled a slight hammy, but he didn't want me to go in the DL. So what happened was Ellie on the airplane going to Boston, he sits back. He said, can you play? I said, absolutely, I could play. I knew I was going to get taped up. you know, I first thing that I started to think about Mickey, he got taped up like a mummy. Hey, you know, just my right hammy, I'm going to be taped up too. Hey, it's freezing up there. We're breaking camp when it's 90 degrees. We're going up to Boston where it's 35 degrees. We hated the Red Sox. We wanted to beat them bad, and we wanted to fight them. And that was fun. When you play a rivalry and, you know, when you have games that Thurmy hated Fiss, Bill Lee hated Pinella, you know, Nettles hated Bill Lee. Everybody hated everybody. Pinella hated everybody. I hated everybody. So you knew there was going to be a scuffle. And to be honest with you, people don't like to hear this, but that was fun.
That's, you know, hey, listen, I'm an old school fan. I love hearing this from you.
Oh yeah. No. When we slid into second base and we break up a double play. Oh, we love that.
Yeah, no, I missed that. I missed that about the game when you got guys that won't even, they won't even slide into second base.
Oh, no, play. It's no. And when we used to, when we had an opportunity to slide into Fisk, but we didn't have any opportunity. Oh, that was wonderful. I wanted to knock his chin guards off of him, his mask off, and you know, get his hair dirty, because every time he walked, he was too clean. But we had that rivalry. We loved that. But anyway, I got to bat. I saw my name on the lineup card. I had no idea. Got my first AB. Walked against Louis Tiant. Mel Stottlemyre was pitching. Tiant was throwing pretty good. I was lucky because I thought Orlando Cepeda was going to be the first DH, because I was hitting sixth that game. So I became the first DH. We lost the game 15-5. After we lost the game, I had about 100 reporters come into the clubhouse, and everybody's looking at me. They said, "What did you do?" Like that. You know, I had no idea. You know, can I be honest with you? I didn't know I was the first DH till the reporters came in. They said, "What was it like to be the first DH?" I didn't know what they're even talking about, to be honest. I was playing a baseball game. And Mel Stottlemyre was upset with me because he was a great hitting pitcher, and I hit for him. And, you know, and he didn't want that to happen.
Yeah.
When he saw me being he knew I was the first DH, and he came to the ballpark. He said, "Bloomy, I can't believe they letting you hit four at bats against Louis and not letting me hit."
That's great.
I said, "Hey, I said, Stott. I said, hey, it's nothing I did. You know, I mean, this is what it is," like that. So I got up to bat. We lost 15-5. They took my baseball bat. They put it in the Hall of Fame. They took the ball. They took some stuff and whatever. I got a whole big display in Cooperstown. And I got in the Cooperstown the back door rather than the front door. And that's what I tell people. But I wish, but unfortunately, you know, everybody told me, you know, and everybody, you know, I had, you know, and I'm not trying to brag anything like that, but I was a five-tool guy, and, you know, and I got injured. And unfortunately, when you get injured back then, they didn't have the modern technology, what they do have now. And I had a shoulder operation, then I had a knee operation, and I just went downhill after that. And it was just nothing I can do, but I still got to play up in New York for 8 years. I love the people. I love the Yankees. I love the fans, and I love y'all.
Well, thank you. I got to ask you this, because we kind of got into, you know, the old school mindset of baseball, which I miss, because I'm old enough to remember a time when things were much different than they are right now. And I got to ask this: you hear a lot of guys, especially a guy like Stanton, you know, Giancarlo Stanton right now, who's transitioning into the designated hitter role, how much different it is to adjust when you're not out there every step of the way, you know, in the field and keeping yourself warm. And what kind of an adjustment was it for you to go into that designated hitter role? And on top of that, I got to ask, as far as injuries go, because you were a guy who was injured a lot. Do you kind of roll your eyes at some of these guys now who are missing so many games with all these injuries, or do you just think it's technology and the advancement of medical, you know, equipment now that we have guys sitting out maybe way more than they used to.
Well, okay. Number one, when I was a DH, I had no idea what to do. I'm freezing sitting down next to Ellie, okay, after I walked. And I said, Ellie, what do I do? I said, this is tough. You know, I'm going to be sitting down here for like, you know, 20 minutes, half an hour, whatever. He said, well, why don't you take your bat, go up into the clubhouse. And when you – the clubhouse in Fenway Park stunk because you go from the clubhouse and you look like you're walking over Shea Stadium, you know, because you had that marsh. Shea Stadium, you know, was built on that marsh. And you always would go over a wooden plank to the clubhouse. No, I'm sorry, to the bench. So I'm sitting, you know, I'm sitting down next to Ellie, and Ellie said, why don't you go up to the clubhouse? So I go up to the clubhouse. It's warm up there. Sitting on my locker. You really can't swing because you don't have a lot of room. So I'm sitting down, listening to the radio, listening to a game. We don't have a TV up there. There's no TVs up there. We just had a radio. I'm listening to the game. Vince, the clubhouse guy, started bringing out the food. This is funny. He brings out the food, and I'm sitting there, and we always have like onions and kielbasa and, you know, and a sauerkraut. That's what he always had. This is Boston. So I'm sitting there. I'm smelling the kielbasa, and I'm just walking past there. I said, I got to eat a kielbasa. I said, this is pretty good. So I put a mustard, and I put sauerkraut and some ketchup on it, some relish on it. I'm sitting there like a fan. I'm listening to the game, eating it. So I started thinking, oh, I'm going to be getting up pretty soon. So I put everything down, ran to the field the next time up, got a base hit. So I did the same thing again. So I did the same thing again. I said, this is not bad. Hey, we didn't get paid much. I think I was getting paid like $1,200 a month. But back then, that was a lot of money.
Yeah.
Back then. You know, we were making no money. So I'm sitting there. I said, this is not too bad. I'm saying, I'm sitting, listening to the game. And when I want to get up to hit, I go up to bat like that. So I did that the whole game. And I said, this really wasn't that bad. So the second game we played against the next day, Bill Lee pitched. And I did not face him. So I had to sit on the bench. But anyway, getting back to your thing with Stanton and Sanchez and all those guys, people don't realize the DH is a full-time player now because they play it in Little League now. They play in high school, college. 95% of professional teams, they have the DH. It's not like, you know, you don't do anything. Every stadium that you go to now, you go to Yankee Stadium now. I was talking to Swish, Nick, and all these guys are real good friends of mine. So I go down to a stadium, go down to the clubhouse, and, you know, between at-bats, you know, they're looking at their computers and they're watching the computers. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying to myself, there's no way in the world I could watch because every time up at-bat is a different thing in baseball. I mean, you know, I mean, it's not the pitcher's not going to pitch you the same pitch to you.
Right.
It's everything is different. So why are you watching if you take a great swing and you got a base hit and you're hitting a good fastball? Now they're going to throw a hard slider into you or away to you. You know, I mean, you have to adjust more. So why are you looking at that because you got a good base hit? So computers, the analytics stinks. I'm going to be honest with you. You can ask Goose about that. You can ask David Wells about that. The name of the game of baseball, and Cashman, many, many years ago, I was sitting up with Cash, and we're real good friends. And he said, Bloomy, he said, and, you know, I knew what he was getting at because I wasn't doing much. I'm up at the stadium all the time. And he really asked me if I really want to get it back in the game and be a hitting coach. And I knew what he was doing, okay? So he asked me, he said, okay, if you're teaching somebody how to hit, Number one, I'm thinking, if you up professionally, if you're up in the big leagues, you know how to hit, right? Okay, you know how to hit. Okay. I remember, you know, he said, what's your philosophy? I said, it's three things. You see the ball, you swing, and you hit it. That's what you do. If the ball's on the outside part of the plate,
you go with
you
it.
Hit the ball away. That's it. If the ball middle and in, you pull the ball. Okay. You know, I mean, this is what you do. But how do you get there? I said, if you can hit, you can hit. You can't teach. You know, Elston Howard was our hitting coach in the big leagues. And Ellie, and it was always, you know, everybody goes into slumps. It's part of baseball. You go 0 for 15, 0 for 17. So, you know, you're down a little bit. Ellie, what do I do? He said, see the ball, you swing, and you hit it. Okay, that's what I did. So instead of doing that, you might pick up 7-8 hits in the next 12, 13 ABs. And that's how you do things. With the all these analytical things, with all these, you know, I mean, these guys nowadays, and I'm going to tell you honestly, and it's a very simple, I look at these. You know, you go to spring training. When we go to Yankee fantasy camps, you know, you see the kids go down there early. You see them playing games. They lift weights before the game. They lift weights after the game. You know, like David Cone, you know, the pitcher David Cone said to me. He said, Bloomy, he said, what do you think about all these hitters? You know, they pull these obliques. You know, I don't even know what oblique was. You know, we just hit. He said, okay, remember Babe Ruth and remember Willie Horton. Remember all these guys. They have a little bit of fat. He said, how many people with fat on them pull a muscle? And think about that. All these guys, all these ball players are Zeus. All these ball players are muscular. They're too muscular. They get this. Body fat from 16% down to 3%. You know, you take so many swings. You know, I mean, sure, you gonna pull something because I mean, you need something around that to cushion it. And these guys are just too muscular. They look great in muscle magazines. They look great in that. But you know what? To be honest with you. They signed 4-year contracts. So if they're on the DL for 2 years, they're still getting paid.
Oh, yeah.
We had to play. And we have to have stats. Nowadays, it's no stats. It's a homer or a strikeout. But that's what the fans like. And it's entertainment. Back then, we played small ball, hit first to third, steal a base. The name of the game is still score runs. Am I right?
Yep.
You score runs and try to score runs in every inning.
I can't state that enough, where we've turned into a sport where I'm screaming at the television for Brett Gardner to steal second base, and then I have people telling me that stealing a base doesn't make sense anymore, and it frustrates me to no end.
Because oh, it kills you.
When I look for production, I look at run production. I mean, don't tell me anything else outside who's going to score me runs, who's going to produce runs for me, who's going to get on base enough to get runs in. And it's just like everything is just taken to a different level now, and it kills me.
The Tampa Rays are so good because they play fundamental baseball.
They do.
When Joe Madden was down there, he didn't have the superstars. He didn't have the guys that hit 40 home runs. He played small ball, first to third, getting a rundown, coming from third to home like that. Now. You know, I mean, if you get caught in a rundown from third to home, and if the catcher barely catches a ball, and if he has a ball like three seconds before you get there, we are taught to run right into him,
pummel him,
and break him up.
That's it.
So, you know, the ball is on the ground. Nowadays, if you do that, you tell him, tag me. Tag me. You're out.
Yeah.
Like that. That's not the way to play baseball. The game of baseball is going to go – eventually it's going to go back to the way that the real baseball plays. Because this is no, to me, I'm up at the stadium every single day when the season is. It's not fun to me to watch. They got a man on second and third with one out. The guys, instead of trying to hit a base hit, hitting some, that's what happened to Sanchez. That's why he's hitting from, that's why he was such a great hitter from a 270 to 200, 280. That's why, you know, he pulls everything. He just wants to hit the mammoth 500-foot home run.
We couldn't agree more with that, Ron.
But you don't do that. Yeah. You don't play baseball like that. That's why he hit a buck 80 last year. Now he hit a buck 40 this year.
Yep.
We did want to get your perspective on something because you were, while we have you here, because you were part of one of the most historic days of in Yankee history, because you were on the team in 1973 when the Yankees were sold to George Steinbrenner. Just take us through that. Like, what was that like being part of a team that was sold? You know, the Mets were just recently sold, so it doesn't happen that often. And especially that, you know, the Yankees were owned by a big corporation, by like CBS, and then now you got this huge personality like George Steinbrenner coming in there. Take us through what that was like being part of the sale of the Yankees.
Well, it's very simple. When you had CBS, CBS looked at us as a just as a team to make them probably to lose them money so they could write it off. They had, you know, in their portfolio, they owned the New York Yankees. Okay, we knew in '73 that the Yankees were being purchased by a group in Cleveland, the Steinbrenner Group. And we knew he owned 51%, and we knew 49% was going to be minorities. That time, we had Bill Verdon was the manager. As soon as George came in, Billy came on as the Yankee manager. Okay, that was a twofold thing when you have a Billy Martin coming for a Bill Verdon. And plus, when George came in, he brought a lot of his minority people, and I thought it was unbelievable, because he sat everybody down before the game. He said, Billy Martin is going to be your new manager. And some of the guys played with Billy. You know, I mean, I never played with Billy before, but I knew about him, of course. Of course, being the second baseman, being one of the best Yankee second basemen ever, being the type of character he was, and you know, so you hear different things. And I played against him, of course, but when George came in and he said to us, and we had a pretty good team then, okay, not a great team, but a good team, we're coming up. And when George came in, sat down, he said, whatever y'all need to win, I'm going to bring back the Yankees back what they used to be to the New York fans. And we're going to have a winner. And whatever it takes, I'm going to accomplish that feat. And I knew back then, and I went up to him and I introduced, he said, I know you, you know, like that. I've seen you play. He said, you're going to be here for many years. So that made me feel good. I mean, it made you feel good that you have a hands-on owner. And let me tell you something. George was a different type of guy, but he was one of the greatest human beings as you ever met before in your whole life. You give him 120%, he'll give you 125%. You give him 90%, he's going to kick your tail. It's going to be like the old paddle. You know, if you're bad in school, your principal is going to get those paddles with the big round hole in it and paddle you. And that's the type of guy he was. He was a type of guy that wanted he wanted everybody to give 120%. When you wore that Yankee pinstripe uniform on, that is something that not many people have done. That is a kosher braille. You know, I mean, it's something. It's so, you know, I mean, what can I say? It's like the Bible. It's, you know, you doing, you know, I mean, it's that. And, you know, that's what he wanted the Yankee fans to come back in. and see what we're doing. And that's the year 73 we got Catfish. Am I right?
73, I believe. Yeah.
73. That's the year that we got Catfish coming in, you know, and that's what he did. He started bringing people in. And that's when, was that the year? Because I'm not good with dates. You know, I know the teams that I played on. But what year did we get Sparky? Was it 73?
Sparky Lyle was 72. I know he was on the 73 team because I was looking at the roster before.
So Catfish Hunter signed with the Yankees in Catfish actually signed with the Yankees in 1975.
75.
Sparky Lyle signed with the Yankees in 1972.
Okay, so Sparky Lyle, yeah.
So we had a pretty decent team coming in, you know, and but when George came in, you know, everybody thought, oh God, this guy's going to be great. He's going to do this. He's going to do that. But 2 weeks after that, he started fining people like $5 and $10. And you better run to first base. If you don't run to first base, you know, I'm at a game. I'm at a game and Robinson Cano was not running fast when he was on the Yankees then. I don't know if you remember that when he was like running to first base too hard. But if George would have seen that right off the bat, his clothes would have been packed already. His regular clothes would have been packed. It would have been shipped to the minor leagues. He would have to go in his car to go to Scranton or wherever they were to in his uniform. That's what he would have done. You don't do that with George. No, you better give you 120%. You give you 120%, he'll do anything in the world for you. I've seen him take care of kids. And when we had him, let me tell you something. He was like a second father to me. He took care of me. He was tough on me. Almost made me get a haircut when I was hitting 406 through August. I told him go, you know, whatever, up in his office and to get a haircut because he had a barber up there for me to get a haircut. And I told him, I'm hitting 406. You think I'm going to get, I'm Samson. You're not going to give me a haircut. But that was the type of guy he is. You got to stick up for yourself. You stick up for yourself and you're in the right. He respects you more. That's the type of guy he was.
Ron, I got to say real quick before I ask this next question, I was talking to my dad about you the other day. I was telling him we were having you on the show and he said, you know, I still remember like it was yesterday. The year that he was hitting 400 through half that season. He was in, I think you topped out around 406 or 409.
406, yeah.
Yeah, 406.
I had a 27 game hitting streak.
He remembers it like it was yesterday.
Yeah, that was a year that I was on Sports Illustrated and Sporting News with Bobby Mercer. And that's what ended my hitting streak at 27 and 28 games, I forgot. Was Ralph Houck made me pinch hit against Vida Blue. And when I pinch hit against Vida Blue, hey, it's funny. You know, I mean, I hit pretty decent against left-handers, you know, I mean, but they didn't allow me to for whatever reason. And but I hit the ball to the wall in right center, hit the ball pretty good. And I thought it had a chance, but it didn't. But that was part of baseball.
Then. Yeah.
Hey, I was very lucky and very happy to be on the New York Yankees. And when you that's how I felt. I was blessed. I was blessed. And, you know, and when you, like I told you before, when you got that Yankee pinstripes on and when you got on, when you got to play in front of the best fans, I mean, absolutely. I'm just telling you, honestly, they're the greatest and the best of the best of the best. And even to this day, when I walk in the city, they recognize me and they talk to me and they give me a thumbs up and stuff like that. And you know, and I love them to death. They're the people. The fans are the people are the heroes of this game. I did something what I wanted to do. I lived my fantasy. The fans were the heroes. I tell the ball players nowadays, when they don't ask for your autograph, they forgot about you. And when they keep on asking them to do a Zoom or to do an interview with or to sign an autograph, you should be very blessed because that means that they still like you or love you or whatever. Just be good to them. That's all.
Well, Ron, we got a couple more for you here. We appreciate all your time with us. We know you've been keeping up with the current state of the Yankees. You're very active on social media. We've been talking about on Twitter. Everyone can follow Ron at Ron Bloomberg 1. This team has been really close to winning it all in the last few years, and they continue to fall short. It's something that's been as spoiled Yankee fans growing up in the late 90s, you know, early 2000s. I mean, we were spoiled, and they keep falling short, and there just seems to be that one thing that's holding them that's holding them back and from getting over the hump and getting the 28th championship. If you had to point your finger and put your finger on one thing, where do you think it is? What do you think it is that's holding them back?
It's very simple for me, injuries. Because you it's just not one person goes down. It seems like when one guy goes down, four more guys on the disabled list. I mean, you can't have a Judge who is right in the center of your lineup. You can't have Stanton, who they expect, you know, for making $300 million not to be in the lineup every single day. You have Sanchez, who, you know, is coming off a hammy or tightness of his calves or whatever. You have these guys to get injured, and you can't take three guys. You know, if you look at the guys that are out, or and the pitchers too, and, you know, the pitchers are not, you know, I talk to Goose all the time about it. And when he was relief pitching, he was pitching 3-4 innings every time he had the relief. Nowadays, you pitch 12 pitches. These guys, starting pitchers, they pitch for 5 innings. After 5 innings or 4 innings, they're out. They have a pinch count of 70 pitches. Now, you know, people are going to say, well, you know, it's this or that or whatever. But I'm just looking what I played. You had a Jim Palmer. You had a Nolan Ryan. You had a Bob Gibson. You have Steve Carlton. They pitch 140, 150 pitches. They don't want to come out of the game. Or Catfish. They never had bad. Did they have a bad? Tell me, did they have bad shoulders? No. They're in shape. You know, okay, I'm not saying they're not in shape. They're in shape to pitch how many innings that they want them to. Now, after the pitchers pitch 5 innings, now they have a 6-inning pitcher, a 7th-inning pitcher, mm-hmm. an 8th-inning pitcher, and a 9th. Now, if you have Chapman who came out, and then, and then you have Britton who is really, I mean, I think, you know, I mean, he was really a super pitcher in Baltimore, and I think he has really picked up. But you need a consistent hitting. You know, I mean, if you look at the other teams, if you look at the other, everybody has pitchers and players on the DL, but not as much as the Yankees. The Yankees, it seems like to me for the last 3-4 years, 5 years, that, you know, half the teams on the DL or been on the DL, you know, I mean, so that's telling you, and they got new physical trainers and this and whatever, but that's maybe it's telling you, you know, let some of the players go and get a little, not fat. I'm just saying a little bit of a cushion that, you know, if you're going to get 400 ABs, you know, I mean, they're going to have a little bit of cushion when they hit. And, you know, it's just not you taking hitting in batting practice, you hitting in the cages, you hitting, you know, I mean, just think of how many swings that you actually have. You have tons of swings. But I think injuries to me is the prime thing about, you know, if they cut down on that, they got the talent. They were supposed to win this year, but they got hurt again. They got to do something with the injuries. If they accomplish that, I think you're going to have a great team.
Well, Ron, we're going to let you go on this here. We're going to ask you a couple questions because we did find out that you have a couple books, one that you already wrote and one that's kind of in the works here. It's on your Twitter that you're currently working on a book called The Captain and Me about your relationship with Thurman Munson. Thurman Munson's an interesting guy because, you know, obviously his career got cut short with that tragic plane accident. And he was kind of leading the resurgence of the Yankees in 76 as a captain of the team. Just tell the fans when and where they can pick up the book and if you have a story about Munson that you could tell us.
Well, all the stories are in the book. Okay, that's number one. Okay, that's number one. Number two, Thurman was my roommate for 4 years, okay? The book is going to be incredible. It's not like, it's not a show off, tell all book. It's a book about him and I, what we did playing, what we did on the field and off the field. It's a book about him, about, you know, everybody says he's scrappy, dirty, ugly, you know, this and won't get in your face, but he's the most harmless, greatest human being you have ever seen before in your whole life. The book is going to be, it's, we did pranks. We did stuff what we did with Sparky did with his cakes, shot BB guns and two lights. And we did everything. And it's a book where people are going to laugh. It's going to be serious and they're going to cry. It's a book. If anybody saw the movie, Bang the Drum Slowly. Anybody saw that movie, Bang the Drum Slowly?
Ask I've heard father. Of it. I never actually, yeah. I
okay. Never got around to watching okay. It, Thurman and I in that movie about it's Robert De Niro in it. It's a great book. It's a great movie. You got to see it if you have an opportunity to watch it. It's great. It's a De book Niro's about,
in that, right?
Excuse me.
De Niro's in that, right?
Yeah.
De Niro's in De Niro. It's a wonderful story. It's about a guy who became real good friends with a person who was sick. And I was on the DL a lot. Thurman helped me a lot. And we did an awful lot on and off the field, during the season, off the season. We lived together. We roomed together. We did that together. We did this together. We went with some of the people like Carlos Gambino, who was John Gotti and Frankie Valli and mm-hmm. Jay Black and the Four Tops, the Temptations, and you know all those guys, and Louis Armstrong. What we did, I mean, this is what we did. It's a great book, and people have already come up to us about maybe doing a movie about this. This is how this type of book is. It's going to be a number one bestseller. I'm just telling you. If you want to get the book, it just came out. They just sent the transcripts to the publishing company yesterday to Triumph. And it's going to be close to about 300 pages. It's going to be great. I mean, really going to be great. And people would not have talked about maybe doing something with that. Okay. But anyway, you could pre-order the book on Amazon. I don't know how you do Amazon. You know, how you do that?
Good with the Amazon now. Amazon.
Just tell them Amazon.
They'll find it in 2 seconds. Amazon,
look me up with Thurman Munson. Look me up. Okay. Get a pre-order the book. You'll love it. Believe me, you'll love. You're not going to get it till April. And things are going to be great. It's going to be a great book. Okay. But anyway, in my other book, Designated Hebrew, it came out in 2006. We sold 65,000 copies of the book. I didn't make any money on it. I sent it, gave it back to all charity. It's a great book. It really is a great book. Jeremy Schapp and Dick Schapp and I came up with the name of the book. Okay, that's number one. And it's a great book, too. And I'm putting it out back, they just got it paperback, and they got the three more chapters in it. Now it's modern now. So it's a great book. It's you can go to Ron Bloomberg, Yankees.com. And remember, Bloomberg is not like the mayor of Bloomberg.
It's 1-0. 1-0.
It's 1-0. It's not 2-0s. Okay. If you want to go get the book, I already sold like about 16 cases of the books already. It's been fun. I mean, I've been signing them and stuff. It's been fun.
You're just having a good time.
Anyway, it's a great book. And I'll inscribe anything what you want in it. And it's been fun of the world that we live in now. But I just want to let you know, this has been a pleasure. It's been great. The fans, like I keep on saying, are the ones that made me go. They're wonderful. And like I said before, they're just anything I do for, you know, I mean, the greatest thing in the world, real quick. When I go to Yankee Stadium all the time, I go out and watch them take BP, and everybody's hitting home runs. You know, I mean, in left field, it's probably about 40, 50 balls just laying there like that. So I take my 8 or 9 balls, and I usually go up in the stands, and I always do this. This is This is wonderful. It makes your heart great. You always give a ball to somebody's in a wheelchair with Down syndrome that they don't even know who you are, but it's wonderful. And you give it to them. And most of the people who are, you know, pushing them in, they have no idea who I am. I said, I played. I'm going to sign it for them. So put that up one day and you could show somebody and maybe they might have heard of me or whatever. But to give something to people like that, that's what it's all about. If somebody could come up and make people smile and be happy, that would that's what makes me, and I love it. And I've been blessed with that, to be honest with you. And I love to make people happy. That's all.
Oh, Ron, it's been absolute pleasure, man. Thank you so much.
This is absolutely above and beyond anything we could have expected. Love hearing the stories about, you know, the old days with Mickey Mantle and those guys, because if it wasn't for Mickey Mantle, I don't know if I'd be a Yankee fan. My grandmother got into baseball because of Mickey Mantle and passed it on to my dad, who passed it on to me. So it's always great talking to somebody that played with him and hearing stories about that era. So Ron, again, thank you so much, man. We appreciate the time and the stories.
I could talk all day, but I hope I didn't talk too long.
Not at all.
No, it was great.
I hope the fans are gonna love this. But, you know, like I said before, you know, and thank you very much for having me. If you could send this to my email and whatever, if you y'all go to many Yankee games, y'all.
Oh, yeah.
You much?
Absolutely.
You know, I'll tell you.
If they let us in, we'll be there, Ron.
Oh, I'll get you up into the suites. You know, I'll get you up there and you can see my picture. I'm up. I got a big picture up in number 12 suite. You know, they got. Number, like, I think it one through
32
or whatever the suites. And I'm up on number 12, and they have a big picture of me and Ron Svoboda, who just got called up that year, and with Ralph Houck and my mom and dad and stuff like that. That was a wonderful thing. But if once we start, please look me up.
Oh, we'd love that.
And maybe you could talk to Randy again, who's a real dear friend of mine, and Lon Tross and all those guys, and come up to the stadium and I'll hook you up with some hot dogs and pretzels
that works for me,
and great pizzas and stuff like that. It'd be fun to for y'all to really come up and to live your dream also to
absolutely
watch your game
absolutely to. Ron, thank you.
Thank you, Ron.
So please make sure you follow Ron on Twitter at Ron Bloomberg One, the number one.
Only 1-0.
Ron Bloomberg One. Help this man get that blue check mark. An awesome, awesome guy. Great stories. Great time, Ron. Thank you so much for
joining us. Thanks, Ron. We really appreciate it. And we'll definitely stay in touch.
And I like this blue check mark. I don't have any idea what it is, but I want a blue check mark.
Thanks,
talking
Ron.
With y'all, big guys.
You too. All right, thank you.
Thanks, y'all. Bye-bye, y'all. Be safe. Bye.
You too.
Bye-bye,
you
y'all.
Too. All right, we're back here. That was our interview with Ron Bloomberg. Follow Ron on Twitter, at Ron Bloomberg One. It's R-O-N-B-L-O-M-B-E-R-G One.
1-0.
Well, you're confusing people because you're saying 1-0.
1-0. It's like a blonde.
I said the number one, and then you're like 1-0.
Oh, no. It's like Ron Blomberg. That's how you want to remember it, so you don't misspell it.
Bloomberg.
But it's Bloom. You pronounce it Bloom, but if you want to not confuse yourself, it's Blom, right?
Just say it in your head that way, but Ron don't say Blom. It out loud.
But don't say it out loud. That's rude, because you'd be saying his name wrong.
No, we don't want to. We don't want to tick off Ron because he was one. I mean,
honestly, how awesome is that? Seriously,
we talked to a lot of amazing people on this show, but that might be at the top of the list now.
Oh, it's got to be. I mean, it's got to be. And, and like you said, we've had some pretty great guests on this show. If we had to go like more modern interview versus old school, Ronnie definitely takes the old school. The more modern, I'd say Brett Boone was a pretty awesome interview, but the stories I just got from him, I'm not going to get that anywhere else.
I mean, if we could have probably had Ron for 5 hours if we wanted.
I could have sat with Ron. I could have let him talk for 5 hours and still would have wanted more probably.
And honestly, man, if we can get into the stadium this year, I'm going to take him up on that offer.
Absolutely. I'm hounding
Ron
him.
And watch a baseball game with him and just pick his brain as we're watching the Yankees play. That would be amazing.
You know,
I mean, if you look,
he talked about
Ron kind of.
I was just going to say, he talked about meeting Phil Rizzuto, like one of his first times. I can't imagine a conversation between Ron and Phil Rizzuto as he got older.
He's just throwing out the name Carlo Gambino like it's nothing. Like, you're hanging out, you and Thurman Hunter are just chilling with one of the biggest gangsters ever, and he's just like throwing out that name like it's nothing. Like, that's the type of guy I want to sit and talk to.
I love it. I loved every second of it.
I think Ron gets a little typecast in a way because, you know, he's known as the first DH, but I mean, injuries really did derail Ron's career. I honestly, looking at the numbers and seeing what a great hitter he was, if he could have been healthy throughout the course of his career, he said he got in the Hall of Fame in the back door. He would have been in the Hall of Fame in the front door. Honestly, he was a great hitter, a great player. And he talked about the Yankee injuries. I mean, maybe, you know, unfortunately, you know, maybe that's like a thing going back even into the 60s with this team.
If you had to compare him to like one guy that you can think of more modern day where injury kind of held him back from Cooperstown, can you think of anyone?
I don't know.
I feel like there's one guy that's on the tip of my tongue, and I can't say, like, if he didn't get injured and if he had played his career all the way through, he probably would be in Cooperstown. But injury kind of held him back. There's definitely a couple guys out there.
Yeah, I'm sure there are if we think about it. But I mean, you know, that's, people think like Ron is just like this footnote in history, but he was a really, really good baseball player. You don't get drafted number one overall on a fluke. So, yeah, I mean, it was pretty awesome to talk to him. I wasn't expecting that at all. You know, I don't want to say the preconceived notions about people when you talk to him, but I didn't think that we were going to get that out of Ron Bloomberg. Like, I'm not taking an interview just to take an interview. Like, I want, you know, there's reasons why you want to talk to somebody. I thought he had an interesting story to tell. Who knew that we were going to get that out of him?
Yeah.
So that was really amazing.
Definitely pick up those books too. I'm actually excited for the Thurman Munson one. I got to be honest.
Oh, absolutely. He really gave it the hard sell. And I love the way that he was like, all the stories are in the book. Hey, you know
yeah,
what,
hey,
man?
Screw
you guys got to make a buck. Everybody's got to make money. So you want to hear those stories, pick up the book, go to Amazon, pre-order it. He said it'll be out in April, which, you know, I don't have the patience to wait. I wish we could read it now. That's it. He really gave it the hard sell, especially with all those names he was dropping of people. That
John Gotti.
Like, yeah, John Gotti, no big deal.
So, oh, man.
I think we're just going to kind of wrap up the show here. I don't think we really need to touch on anything else. Ron gave us all the content we needed and more today. So, you know, there's really not much going on. DJ LeMay, you won a Silver Slugger Award if you get excited over that.
Whoop-de-doo.
No Yankees won. I think it was it LeMay and Frazier were up for gold gloves?
And neither
one got one.
Gio.
Oh, it was Urshela and Frazier were up for him.
Fucking joke.
Yeah.
What a joke.
Who cares? I don't know if I read it correctly, but LeMayu's a finalist for the MVP award.
Again, whoop-de-doo. He's not going to win it.
Right. I mean, really, I know a lot of consternation right now is people are getting anxious that they haven't signed them yet, but just be patient.
Yeah.
I
really believe they will. I really do.
I mean, really, if you think about it, and I see Stat Guy Rye's point of view from that somebody will throw crazy money at him. The only reason why the Mets would ever think about doing it is just straight up out of spite at this point.
Out of spite.
That Steve Cohen would want to make a big splash and steal a Yankee. But I got to think that unless it's something so ridiculous that LeMayu wants to stay here and the Yankees want to keep him here. So
I agree.
We'll see what happens.
I don't think there's anything
to
worry about there. To be honest,
I think we'll see what happens in the next week. I know a lot of fans are getting feverish over the possibility of getting Francisco Lindor. I saw some crazy tweet that said the Yankees can get Lindor for Frazier and Mike Tauchman. I mean,
please.
You know what? If the Indians are going to make that trade, the GM should just hand in his resignation as he signs the trade papers.
Him and the GM for the Pirates can go play golf together. Seriously. Come on.
I think that'll do it for us this week. I don't really know what else
we let
to talk
Ron.
About.
We really we owe. Do we owe Ron money for just taking over the show?
This was the Ron Bloomberg show.
I'll tell you what, man. We'd actually have a great, great podcast with him.
We should. I have no issues taking a back seat on the show this week.
Absolutely.
So please follow us on Twitter @Chris Jr. _NYYST @Christian _ NYYST.
Don't follow Stack Guy Ride
because he's a bum and he's going to be on the show today. But follow Ron Bloomberg. Ron Bloomberg 1, RONBLOMBERG 1 at, well, that's his at. So,
yeah.
Help him get that blue check mark. He doesn't even know what it is, but
he doesn't know what it is, but he wants it, which is what I love the most, I think.
Get that man verified,
please.
Thank you to Ron for joining us this week. Follow us on Twitter at NYY Sports Talk, and that should do it. So Chris, say goodbye.